This is The Hollywood Outsider. My name is Scott Clark, and this is also a special episode of our show. Today we're going to be talking with our very own Aaron Peterson solely about the South by Southwest Film Festival, or SXSW as it is sometimes known. We're going to talk about what the festival's like, how it works, and especially what movies should we keep our eyes out for. Our regular Hollywood Outsider podcast is already available at thehollywoodoutsider.com, iTunes, or Stitcher, and our new episode will be out very soon. Now, South by Southwest is one of the largest festivals in the country, encompassing film, music, and interactive media, video games. We will only be talking about the film festival, which showcases just about every type of film you could imagine. Now, they do also offer some keynote speakers, special sessions, and even a trade show. Really interesting festival, a very large festival. But let's get right into it, Aaron. How does it feel to be back, first off?
I'm tired, mostly.
Yeah, mostly.
I mean, it's a really busy event. And if you've ever been, you know, but honestly, if you've ever been to a theme park, that's about how it feels.
Are the lines as long as the theme park?
Yeah, for some movies.
Yeah.
Like Spy at one point had a line wrapping around a couple blocks.
Oh, wow.
Ex Machina, same thing. I mean, it's just bigger movies are going to get bigger lines, but there's a lot of people.
Do they have little signs like they do at Six Flags that says, you know, the wait for this movie is... This, if you're at this point, it's 45 minutes from here or something like that?
No, you basically look and you go, wow, that goes around the street, so that's probably going to be a while. That's kind of how you get the feel for how long the line is. And you really need to get the feel for it to know if you really want to stand in that line, too.
Well, I mean, does it work where, like, they fill up a theater and then you got to sit there and wait for 2 hours for the next showing to come up? Or, I mean...
No, they do movies back to back to back. So basically, once a movie... the screening starts, they start letting people in. They'll start lining up people for the next screening.
Oh,
so
okay.
You might get a 2-hour window before your movie starts. That's about the max. It's not like an all day thing. It's not like a concert.
So really, when you finally get in the theater, it's almost like finally I get to sit down.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you'll see people, the longer lines, people will be sitting on the outside on the ground and that sort of thing. But yeah, once you're inside, you're like, ah, of course, then you have to pee and get your popcorn or whatever you want and... So there's a lot more to it.
That's another question. I think we might have talked about it last year, but I mean, is it like a regular theater where you can go buy popcorn and overpriced snacks and, you know, a big gulp and all that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And different theaters have different concessions. So some might have real snacks. Because, I mean, they basically rent out all the theaters in Austin, Texas for the event.
Mm-hmm.
So all wherever you go, it's a local theater. Yeah, that's getting that business, and then they're going to have whatever their normal snack selection is.
Wow, I didn't even think about that. So, like, if you live in Austin and we're really excited about seeing whatever new movie comes out that week, you're kind of SOL, huh?
Oh, you can still go. They still have them, but, you know, they still have showings of other movies, but you're going to be waiting in a line, or you're going to see a lot of people, and you're going to wonder, what are they going to see? That looks more fun, because there's so many people.
Hmm.
But if you're going to see, like, Cinderella or something, then, yeah.
Okay, so they're not using all the screens for South by Southwest stuff. They still have the regular movies that would be in the theater at the time.
The theaters that have multiple screens are having regular movies. Like if they have like 10, 12 screens, something like that, like the Alamo has multiple screens, they're going to still have other showings. If you go to like the Paramount Theater, which is the biggest one, that's really a single showing theater. So you're only going to get whatever movie they're premiering there, which is why a lot of the headlining movies go there because it seats so many, it's so big, and it only has one screen.
Right. And I mean, we live in a relatively smaller town compared to Austin, so we don't really have any single screen theaters here anymore. I mean, is there a bunch of them in Austin?
Yeah, there's actually quite a few. I was actually very surprised with how many there are. So it's pretty prominent. It's very prominent.
Okay. Well, before we go through the movies that you did see and everything else, can you take us through what the festival is and why it's so huge from a fan's perspective?
Yeah, it's the largest film festival in the country. From my understanding, I think it's bigger than Sundance. It's not just artsy movies. I think some people are under the impression that South By is very much a artistic film endeavor. It's really not. There's films of all genres. They have a carefully selected horror selection as well. They call them Midnighters. They have some artistic endeavors, as you would at Sundance, and they also have some movies that are just trying to gain traction.
Mm-hmm.
What that means is a lot of times they're going to have movies that haven't even been sold yet. You know, the filmmakers have made them. They submitted them to South by Southwest. that committee at South By has, it's known as South By. If you go there, the locals call it South By. Too long to say all the words, apparently.
And too complicated to say SXBW.
Yeah, exactly. It just messes you up. So what they do is they get thousands of submissions of movies, you know, throughout the course of the year. And then that committee has to determine which ones to show. And it's really a melting pot of different film styles where fans of film can go in and see their favorite movies and see the filmmakers themselves. Because as you go to each event, generally the filmmakers themselves will be there to present their film, the stars, mm-hmm. the director, whoever. Even the low-key ones, you know, guys that spend $1,000 on their film, they're still going to be there to present it generally.
Right.
And so that gives the fans a little added perspective because you get a Q&A or you'll get some understanding of the filmmaker's perspective, what it took to get his movie made. You know, there's a lot of factors that go into why it's so interesting and why it's so popular, and that's why. Plus, Austin's a great town.
Well, I get the impression, too, that it's not as limiting as something like Sundance. And I'm not like, I don't say this is a downplay Sundance because I think it's awesome, but whenever I see films come out of there, they always seem to be movies I've never heard of or you know, actors that aren't very well known. It's very much independent and that's it. This seems like it's a lot more inclusion.
It's, I don't want to say pretentious, but I'll say pretentious. Sundance is very pretentious to me. Mm-hmm. I'm not knocking anybody that's a fan of it. I think a lot of great films have come from Sundance, but you don't really get a lot of the big genre pieces there. Mm-hmm. You won't get as much horror. You won't get as much sci-fi. You just won't get those films that a lot of fans of our show are going to appreciate.
Right.
So it's nice that you have a good mix. You'll have your hard-hitting dramas. You'll have your sci-fi masterpieces. You'll have a lot of variations. You'll have a horror. I mean, you'll have a slaughter film. You know, it varies, and there's a lot of options for people that just love film, that just love movies. You know, they just want to be either entertained, they want to be moved, they want to be scared. Whatever it is you want, there's something representing your taste at South By.
You get the feeling they just want some kind of new experience.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's really what it is. I think they do a very good job of finding films from filmmakers either offering a new take on something tired or an engaging take on something we've seen before. Just most of the films are very refreshing. There's a couple I don't think quite live up to par, but, I mean, that happens for any festival.
Well, South By is kind of known for showcasing and premiering films mostly, even though they do other things that we mentioned earlier, but how exactly does that process even work? I mean, how many movies are we talking about?
I don't know what the total is, but there's, I would guess, hundreds probably. At least over 100. I don't know what the final tally is, but because you have just regular feature films, you have documentaries, you have short films, you have short animated films. You know, I mean, basically every category is represented at the film festival. Mm-hmm. So you have, and I'm talking just the film portion. I'm not talking the music and the interactive, the video games part that you care about. the process works essentially. Most ticket holders or pass holders will decide what movies they want to see. You know, you're given all the details on the movies ahead of time. So South By gives you plenty of opportunity to do research and find out what you want to see. And then you have to go. If there's something you definitely don't want to miss and you're afraid that line is going to be long, you can get there early. I believe it starts at like 9 a.m. in the morning this year. You get in line and you can get what's called an express pass, which basically means as long as you get there 30 minutes before start time, you're guaranteed a spot, a seating assignment. Not assignment, but you're guaranteed a seat somewhere in that theater. And basically you're the line that goes in first. So if like say you're seeing something else and you know you're not going to make it until 45 minutes before the movie starts and you're afraid the line is going to be around the street or down the road, whatever, you can get an express pass and then you're guaranteed to get in the movie. You don't have to worry about it.
It's kind of like the fast pass at theme parks.
Yeah, exactly. It's the same thing. And if you don't have one, you're going to have to go over to the back of the line. There's really no special treatment. There's no, well, I'm a critic for this magazine or I'm this guy. You know, unless you are invited by the filmmakers, because as press, you will be invited to some of the screenings. Unless you get in that way, you're going to have to wait in line with everybody else. So It's actually, it works really well because you can only get two of those. So people have to be very particular about what they want to see. And they go from there. And then just go and go get in line and watch your movie.
I got a couple more questions before we get into the movies too. And the first one has to do with, you know, the idea of a festival as it stands. I mean, it seems almost like in our digital world that actually going to a festival and this kind of thing, is this falling by the wayside? I mean, you can download these movies or something. How relevant is this? Is a theater experience that big of a deal for people still, or do you think we're ever going to get to where people will just kind of showcase these movies on an online format somewhere?
I'm sure in the future that'll probably happen, but these festivals are absolutely relevant. There are thousands that go. I mean, I think it's like 40 or 50,000, whatever the number is, go to this festival.
Relevant was the wrong word. I didn't mean to downplay it like that. I just mean, what makes this so special that makes people still want to go so much instead of just doing a screening at home?
Discovery. A lot of these movies will never be sold. They'll never get distribution, or they'll get very minimal distribution, which would be very hard to find. You won't know when they come out. You know, they won't get the marketing behind them. So a lot of these movies are played here, and in the hopes that a studio will discover them, an audience will discover them, talk will start spreading along the internet and begin marketing their film when they can't afford, you know, heavy marketing because obviously they're very low budget. And it goes from there. I mean, it's really about discovering new films and new filmmakers and new opportunities for film and what directions they can go and that sort of thing. It's really about people who love film, not just love going to see Avengers. I mean, they love all kinds of film, and this is a place where they can discover new ideas and opportunities.
Hearing you describe it makes it sound a lot kind of like, bear with me with this analogy, but like the iTunes app store or the Android app store, where there's so much stuff out there that it's almost impossible to wade through. So this festival almost sounds like it's taking the cream of the crop or what people think is the best and saying, here, watch these, experience these, where we don't have that feature in apps that work very well. Is that kind of what it's like? Like, here, check these out because these are good.
I guess. I mean, if you want to keep equating it to the digital age, yeah. I mean, it's a lot of people. I know some people prefer to see everything at home and they don't want to venture out. Mm-hmm. But most film buffs I know would rather see the movies in the theater and discover it. So this is an opportunity for diehard film buffs and critics alike to go and see films that aren't even out yet, might not come out for a year because they haven't even been sold yet. And discovering them, get the word out, let people know these films are out there. Keep an eye out for them. Look for these films later, either on iTunes or in your theater.
Okay. One more thing I got to ask. Why Austin? It seems so far away from either the coast where a lot of movies are made. How did one of the biggest film festivals find its way into the middle of Texas?
Honestly, it just became like this little epicenter of filmmaking. I mean, you know, you've got Harry Knowles, Ain't It Cool News started there. Which is a huge, huge online, or used to be a huge online website. I think there's too many to name at this point. I don't think anybody is really a defining voice anymore.
Yeah.
Then you've got film.
Well, Hollywood Outsider is.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. To the people listening anyway. You've got filmmakers from Robert Rodriguez to a lot of other talents have come out of that area for whatever reason. And it's kind of become a little mecca for filmmaking. And I think it's just a fun town, so arts just tend to gravitate that way. I have no idea why that's the place to go, but that is the place to go. It's a lot more manageable than trying to have a film festival in downtown LA.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. But, well, let's go ahead and talk about the movies you were able to see at the festival. And I know there was a lot of them you were able to see as much as you could, but obviously impossible to see all of them. But
yeah.
Here's what we're going to do. And I'm going to give a quick synopsis of the film, and then Aaron's going to briefly tell us his thoughts on the film and what his score is. Do you remember that when we rate movies, we do it on a $10 scale as if that were the full price of admission, what would we pay? Now, we're not going to go in any particular order except for one thing. Aaron is going to save his two favorite films from South by Southwest until the very end. So let's go ahead and get started. The first movie on the docket here is a movie called Unfriended. This is an MTV movie about a group of online chat room friends that find themselves haunted by a mysterious supernatural force using the account of their dead friend. Now, if I were going to be 100% honest, whenever I see the MTV logo anymore, I kind of give up immediately before the trailer even starts. But I was actually kind of pleasantly surprised with how this one shaped up. Does this one pay off, or does it make you want to yell at those kids to get off your damn lawn?
I like I'm an old bastard.
Well, you are.
Yeah, that's fair. The thing about Unfriended was I walked in expecting to hate it.
I walked into the trailer with the same feeling.
Yeah, I honestly, to be completely honest with everybody listening, I really thought this movie was going to suck. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily because it was going to be done poorly or anything, just because, I mean, haven't we done all these found footage things to death and now we're doing Skype? I mean, Skype is basically like a storytelling device at this point. You know, I really didn't think it was going to work. But it's one of those movies where I'm so curious because of the concept. You know, the whole movie is told over Skype. Like, right. You have all the various windows, the Skype windows, and that's how your story is told. Mm-hmm. I'm shocked. I really enjoyed it. The deaths could have been a little bit more, you know, graphic probably, but overall, it's a really interesting concept. Really works, surprisingly. I mean, how they incorporate different methods of current technology into the movie shocked me how intelligently they did that.
Right.
It doesn't feel like a gimmick, you know. It felt like, all right, okay. You know, we're getting the, we get detail, we get a lot of interesting information in terms of the story. You know, we get a lot of exposition told through the methods of technology that are available that all the crazy kids these days are using. And honestly, I didn't even know MTV was a producer, so you shocked me. I didn't know.
Well, when I watched the trailer, it was like the first thing that popped up. They got the little moon man or whatever, and I was like, really?
They don't make videos anymore, so they might as well.
Well, they haven't made videos in... But some of the violence and stuff at the end looked like it just went really over the top. Is it really like supernatural?
It is, yeah. And I don't want to say anything because I don't want to give anything away. And I already think the trailer kind of gave too much away.
Yeah.
But the way that they do it is like a girl is shamed into killing herself. She shat herself, right? She's mm-hmm. drunk at a party, and it's something that can happen to any teenager, right? You go to a party,
that
you get
happens.
Drunk. Yeah, there you go. And you shit yourself. And there's certain friends took video of it, released it on the internet, and the social bullying that occurred afterward drove this girl to suicide. A year later, all these friends, which we don't know any connection that they may or may not have to this event, are all online talking to each other, you know, having like a group chat. And a generic account pops up. And turns out that it may or may not be his dead friend. So, and then things start happening, and I don't want to give anything else away because the enjoyment of the movie is exactly what you experience. Mm-hmm. But I was surprised at how well it works when it's put into action.
Yeah, this one's actually near the top of my list of most anticipated of the ones that you were able to see. So, I'm really stoked for that one.
It's worth it. I was, like I said, pleasantly surprised. A lot of young actors, nobody you're gonna know. But it's very creative, and I really, you know, Jason Blum, who's the producer of executive producer of like Paranormal Activity and a lot of the low budget movies, is behind this. So Blumhouse is behind it. So you can pretty much count on a decent horror experience from it. If $10 full price, I give it $6.
Yeah, that's not bad. Well, next up we've got Ava's Possessions. This is director Jordan Gallen's tale of Ava, a recently possessed woman who now has to take responsibility for the damage she did while under the influence. The film stars Louisa Krause, with appearances from known actors like Dan Fogler, William Sadler, and even Carol Kane. Mm-hmm. Now, the trailer I saw was very brief and almost quirky. Is that tone present throughout this entire film, or should I have seen an extended trailer instead?
No, that's pretty quirky. I mean, basically, Ava, the movie starts with her, the demon being excised. And then she has to go see a lawyer because now she's responsible for all the damage she did as a possessed woman, which I think is a funny concept.
It is an interesting concept.
They force her to go to basically like Demons Anonymous or something, or Possessed Anonymous.
So when they say her name, hi, Ava.
Yeah, exactly.
Hi, Ava.
Bunch of people that have been recently possessed, and they have to work out their issues. The movie becomes also about a demon trying to repossess her to a degree. And, you know, what do her family and friends know about this? There's a little bit of a mystery involved. But overall, it's kind of like an interesting and somewhat intelligent take on mixing up the genre. You know, doing something that hasn't been done before in possessed movies. I think it works. I mean, to a degree. It's not... The thing is, there's nothing in the movie that really elevates it to take it to another level. So it just becomes, it's an okay movie. It's an interesting take, but really nothing exciting or overly memorable about it.
That's kind of the feeling I got from the trailer.
Mm-hmm. I mean, my review on this one is $5. I would give it $5. And to clarify for anybody, you know, some people think, well, that's bad. No, that's average. I think it's an average movie. I think you'll probably enjoy your time with it. It's a good rental. It's not one I would run out to the theater to see. It's a lot of good ideas, though. There's a lot of good ideas, just not all of them work out the way that I would hope.
Okay. The next one we got is Honey Trap. Now, in Brixton, London, 15-year-old Layla gets sucked into gang activity and sets up the boy who's in love with her. Now, I'd be lying if I said this trailer didn't bore me. It was like a 3-minute trailer. And I had trouble kind of picking out what was going on in here, but please tell me this movie plays out better than what I saw, because the performances look really great.
I really liked it.
Yeah?
I was pleasantly surprised. In fact, this is one I'll probably try to get an interview with the director. It's one that I left the theater going, wow, that was a well-told story. Didn't go where I thought it was going to go. The performance by Jessica Sula as Layla was just mesmerizing. And I guess let me explain why I think that. The whole movie centers around Layla, and she is like a broken girl. You know, she is very naive. She comes from an upbringing of, she doesn't really know if anyone really loves her. So she's desperate to be loved, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the most human characters I've seen on film in forever. Because she's a little bit crazy, she's a little bit naive, she's a little bit ridiculous, and she makes a lot of innocent girl stupid decisions, you know what I mean?
Right.
And it also kind of tells like a gang perspective from the female point of view, like what the girl sees, you know, as opposed to usually when we get gang violence and stuff, all we ever see are the guys and, you know, they're going back and forth and the fights and everything else. In this movie, you only see what Layla sees. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah. So you kind of see how her involvement causes issues, how her bad choices end up affecting other people's lives and cause a lot of issues to happen, and including violence. And, you know, she has a relationship with her mother that you easily can see why the girl is so broken because of her relationship with her mother. And it's one of those stories where it's a very dramatic human story. It's a character movie and it's just well told. And I don't want to say too much because I don't want to spoil anything about it, but it was not boring at all. I really enjoyed it and loved her performance. Jessica Sula was great.
Loved it. Definitely keep my eye on that one.
And I give that one $7.
$7. Okay. Quitters. This was about a teenager's family that falls apart, so he decides to find a better one. Now, I was not able to find a trailer for this one, and maybe you can share. We talked a little off air about why. Maybe you can share that too. But this premise kind of reminds me of that old Elijah Wood movie North, but I get the impression it's a much darker tone than that, which was more of a comedy. Am I way off base there? Or
what do you mean by North? Because I remember North, but I don't remember really how it would apply, I guess.
Well, North was the one where he's a little kid that decides he wants new parents. So he, like, not divorces them, but sets out to go find new parents to replace them because he thinks they don't love him anymore.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so, okay. Yeah, to a degree. Well, Clark, who is played by Ben Konigsberg, he's a newer actor.
Mm-hmm.
Or newer actor on the scene. I don't know how long he's been working. But his parents are played by Greg German and Mira Sorvino. Greg German, I don't know, one of those. But his mom basically, I mean, just she's got an addiction problem. And eventually she has to be sent into a treatment program. And so then he's left with his dad. These are well-to-do people, right? So it's kind of like telling a more well-to-do person's story, teenager's story, as opposed to the typical poor teenager or average. I mean, these are rich people.
Mm-hmm.
And this kid is just, I mean, full of himself. He's arrogant. He's pompous. And he's weird, a little bit crazy. And it basically, the movie follows him as he ends up, he pines for this, for one girl played by Kara Hayward, who was, she was in Moonrise Kingdom. She was the girl in Moonrise Kingdom that the kid runs away with as Etta. And that doesn't work out. So he ends up pining for another girl and then kind of crashes with her family and then tries to insert himself into their life and leave his life. You know, it's an okay movie. It's an interesting story, but it's like a coming of age story I've seen 100 times.
Mm.
You know, it's nothing new. The only difference is that this character is really a dick. He's not like a nice guy. He's a real dick. And he basically goes through, and it's hard for me as a person, because when a movie is set in a real life situation, when you can't fathom why people are dealing with this crap, it's hard for me to swallow. And I couldn't understand for the life of me why people kept putting Clark up and, you know, taking care of him when he was an obvious dick. I mean, he's a real arrogant prick. And it's, you know, it's not even a problem where it's hard to root for him. I think the actor actually does a really good job with it. It just doesn't work. It doesn't click, and it doesn't feel like a movie. It just feels like something I could see on TV some random time. I give it $4.
Okay. So what attracted you to that movie? Because it doesn't sound like you enjoyed it too much. What made you want to get for that one?
I enjoyed it, but it was just okay. You know, it wasn't – I mean, I didn't leave going, I wish I had my time back.
Right,
you
know, okay.
It was just this story's been told a lot. It didn't really add a whole lot new to that kind of story.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just okay. It didn't make me rave about it.
Okay. What was your final verdict on that one?
$4.
$4. Okay. Speaking of what sounds to be a disappointment, we've got the Sweaty Betty, which is the next one you talked about here. Two separate stories are told in poverty-stricken Washington, D.C. about fathers, best friends, and even a few diehard Redskins fan who try to make a 1,000-pound pig the new team mascot.
Mm-hmm.
This sounds like the weirdest combination of ideas together in one movie. Now, from glancing at your score, I have to assume this one didn't work for you. What went wrong?
Okay, this one, doesn't it sound like something that would be, this would be kind of fun. This would be kind of weird. I mm-hmm. like this. And then you get there, and the directors are Joseph Frank and Zachary Reed. They are young guys, they're really affable guys. I think they seem like really good people. They were there. And they want to be filmmakers. It's really hard to, like, shit on somebody that obviously has so much of their heart in a movie.
Right.
And you think, you know, it's at South by Southwest. It must be good, right? It is not. I mean, the only compliment I can give to the movie is that the filmmakers seem like good guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's not a good enough. The narrative is barely there. It rambles. They hold the camera way too long in certain shots. The actors, I mean, they're obviously, you know, friends of theirs. So I usually can give a pass for that kind of thing. You know, I'm like, hey, not every actor is going to be, you know, an Oscar winner. And sure, as long as the story works, I can usually get past it. But they're just not good. They're not even like reading a script. It's almost like a documentary style with no narrative flow. They do subtitles the entire movie. I mean, basically, these are African. It's an African American community, and there is that lingo, that slang from that particular area in Washington, D.C., you know, the poverty of Washington, D.C. So they talk a certain way, but you don't need subtitles for it. My God. I mean, I realize there's some dumb white people out there, but they're not that dumb. And I found it insulting, because I'm like, for me, that's like saying that we can't understand what the characters are saying. And I'm like, I can totally understand everything they're saying. Why do I need subtitles? That was the first thing that irritated me.
So every piece of dialogue is subtitled?
Every piece. Every piece of dialogue.
And it's in English.
And it's in English. Yeah, it's in English. And I mean, they're African-American, or one of them's African-American, so I know it's not like it's not meant to be insulting. I'm sure he did it for a reason. I just don't know what that reason could possibly be.
Hmm.
It just didn't work. In fact, I found it irritating. But that wasn't the only problem. My biggest problem with the movie is that it's not a movie. It's like somebody did it with their iPhone in their backyard and they didn't have a budget, which is fine. That happens, especially at South By. But it just wasn't good. It just was not good. It's just not a good movie. In fact, I would never watch it again. And it's one of the few movies I've seen in years where I wanted to walk out mid-movie.
Wow.
I mean, I was like, I'm done. This movie sucks. And, you know, but it's hard because as a critic or somebody who reviews movies, you want to find something to say positively. Because I'm not one of those people that review movies and just want to destroy it. Because I know no matter what the movie is or no matter what went into it, somebody worked really hard to try to make that happen, right? Nobody makes a movie trying to fail. And it's just there's some interesting ideas here. There's some the idea of like a redskin, like finding a pig and trying to make it a Redskins mascot is kind of quirky, kind of funny. It just doesn't work overall.
Does that play into the whole controversy with the team's logo at all, or is
no, not really. No, it's more just that's it. That's the story. I mean, you do get a story about single fathers. You've got the two of the main characters basically are raising their kids independently. But there should be more to that. There's not a story. It's just a bunch of people talking, holding the camera and not holding it well. And I can't recommend that to people just because it played at a festival. They even say during the Q&A, they were rejected from 30 other film festivals, which to me says, why the hell are you here? I don't know what
somebody said. Yes,
I get that, but I don't know what they saw in this film to say this needs to play at South By. Because South By, even Quitters, which wasn't great, but it was still a good movie. It's just, you know, kind of repetitive and been done before. Mm-hmm. But I get why they would have it there. I do not understand why this movie was here. Even though the guys seem like the nicest guys, and if they're listening, I'm really sorry. I really am, because I know you guys try. It just didn't work for me. It just didn't.
Did anybody else find some good things about it that you talked to, like walking out of the theater? Or?
Nobody that I talked to, no.
Oh,
actually, I the next movie I went to, I sat with a guy that had just seen it, and he felt the same way. Only he did leave in the middle of it.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's like, I'm not gonna sit through that.
Hmm.
So,
what was your score on that one?
I give it a 2, and I'm letting you know I'm only giving you 2 because I really like the filmmakers.
Oh, wow.
I would actually give it probably like a 1 or a 0. I mean, I wouldn't watch the movie for free again. How's that?
I think that's the lowest score I've ever seen you give.
I don't like doing that. I really don't. I try to find something redeemable about everything, and really in this one, even though I will say that I gave it a 2 primarily because of the filmmakers and the characters on screen, or the actors on screen, they really seem like good people and they're trying.
Right.
I don't think any of them are bad. None of them are bad or anything. So, I mean, it gets a pass in that respect, but just no
story.
Let's
talk about one that we have a little bit more positive things to say, and that's Adult Beginners. This one stars Nick Kroll and Rose Byrne.
Yes.
A young narcissistic entrepreneur crashes and burns on the eve of his company's big launch. With his entire life in total disarray, he leaves Manhattan to move in with his estranged pregnant sister, brother-in-law, and 3-year-old nephew in the suburbs, only to become their nanny. Now, I'm a big fan of Nick Kroll from the TV show The League, and this looks to have him harness a small smidgen of Ruxin from that show, but with a lot more heart. This one is one I'm really interested in checking out. Is it as good as it looks?
Yes.
Yeah?
Shocked. I did not think Nick Kroll was a leading man. I did not. And, I mean, you know him from Ruxin on The League.
Right.
And I think, you know, some people, he's got a Comedy Central show too. He's kind of like the comedian that pops up and does little things. And he'll do the talk show circuit, or he'll do the Nerdist podcast and stuff like that. I just never thought of him as like a leading man, I guess. Mm. And so going into it, it's a movie I wanted to see, but I wanted to see it because I'm a big Rose Byrne fan.
Right.
And then as I'm watching it, and I'm like, Nick Kroll, he can act. I mean, because there's actually some moments where he has to have a little bit of heart. I mean, he does do like the Nick Kroll performance to a degree.
He has some one-liners.
Yeah, his one-liners.
Very Ruxin.
Very much. But overall, he actually created an entire character. He gave the character heart. And the fact that there's actually a comedy, which I haven't seen in, I don't even know how long, about siblings. It's not about some cheesy romantic relationship. It's about a brother and a sister coming back together that have kind of grown apart. They're both struggling in certain aspects. You know, she's struggling being pregnant and adapting to that. And throughout the film, Rose Byrne's character will make some really questionable choices that I think any parent is probably going to worry about, especially a pregnant one.
Right.
And, you know, they just developed like what felt or like a real relationship. They became what felt like a real brother and sister to a degree. And you don't see that as a story point for movies anymore. It's usually he falls into hard times. He finds that one girl that he can love and she brings him out of it and they live happily ever after. It's not that kind of movie, which is probably why I enjoyed it more.
Okay. If $10 is the full price of admission, what would you give that one?
I give that one 7. Really enjoyed it. Really funny. They're both very, very funny. And also Bobby Cannavale, who plays Rose Byrne's husband, he even does a really good job. And in their relationship, feels more realistic than I usually get in film these days. So I really enjoyed it. It's a good movie.
That's up there for me too, and one that I was surprised.
Yes, I do. This is Rose Byrne and Nick Kroll. So. And actually, they answered my question about how they prepare to play brother and sister. Here you go.
How do you prepare to play brother and sister?
Well, we shared various sibling stories, and we bonded over the fact that I'm the youngest of four, exactly the same as Nick, so we had a lot in common like that.
We look a lot alike. I'm the good-looking sibling. But yeah, I think luckily, we had a great breakfast, and I felt very quickly connected. We had met once or twice before then, and then we just kind of started, you know. For the most part, when you're working with the caliber of people like Rose and Bobby, you can basically assume that they're going to be able to bring it, and so we just luckily slipped right into it. Felt pretty natural.
I noticed Mark and Jay Duplass, that a lot of their shows and movies are very rooted in like family dynamics. And so how involved is Mark really in the process?
Mark was very involved throughout. He helped in the early stages of the script. It was really Mark and Liz and Jeff and I, a lot of conversations and a lot of notes and back and forth and figuring out what was working, what wasn't. And then the other thing about Mark, one, he also connected us to Jared Goldman, who physically produced the movie, who he had just worked with on the Skeleton Twins, and Jared did an amazing job making the movie physically happen in so many ways. And then he's just so well-versed in the festival and knowing different people and connecting us and just was a very helpful mentor at really every stage of the movie.
All right, definitely looking forward to that one. Let's move on to another one that was kind of a surprise for me. This is this movie called Spy. Now, it's got Melissa McCarthy and Jason Statham, which has to be the oddest pairing. I didn't see that coming at all. But a desk-bound CIA analyst volunteers to go undercover to infiltrate the world of a deadly arms dealer and prevent diabolical global disaster. Now, we've talked about Melissa McCarthy in the show quite a bit and how we all hope she would kind of shy away from the over-the-top comedy shtick that she's kind of fallen into. Mm-hmm. This one kind of looks to be like a happy medium between being funny and showing a little bit of heart from her. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, and I'll tell you why. The movie starts with Jude Law is basically James Bond.
Right.
And she is his handler / assistant. You know, she is a field agent, but she works from the office and helps him get out of trouble, right? She's on his comm the whole time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when he basically is, well, I don't want to say, something happens to his character and therefore she wants to go out in the field and avenge it. and demands to go. Nobody believes in her. And Allison Janney plays the CIA chief. Does a great job, like she always does.
Oh, yeah, she's so funny.
And the reason that it's different from other Melissa McCarthy movies is instead of making her a bumbling spy, which I think is what people are expecting, you know, she's a bumbling spy who manages to somehow avenge everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Paul Feig, the director, did not do that. Instead, she's actually a great spy who's just been not out in the field. You know, it's like once she gets out there, you see what a great spy she is. I mean, she does everything she should be doing. It's not a bumbling Melissa McCarthy. It's not just making random comments or assessments about her undercarriage. It's it's all about she's a good spy and she's going to get her man slash woman, which is Rose Byrne is actually in this one too. And the most clever thing they do in the movie, which I didn't know that this was going to be a thing. I really thought like she's going to be the bumbling spy and Jason Statham really is going to be the guy that because he's also a spy. Is going to be the guy that saves her, right?
Mm-hmm.
Totally the opposite. Jason Statham is a horrible spy. Screws everything up. And he's ridiculous. He's like a total play on his macho characters from other movies.
That's really interesting, actually.
So funny. He has this bit throughout the movie where whenever he tells her, like, he's a braggart, right? He's mm-hmm. always bragging about how he's so tough and everything. So he's always telling a story about how, you know, he escaped death in some way and somebody else was killed. And it's the most ridiculous, absurd stories you've ever heard. You know, it's like, oh, everybody burned alive, but I walked out of there, you know, completely on fire and I'm perfectly okay and everything else. It just, the stories are ridiculous. And Melissa McCarthy, you know, doing her usual deadpan is like, I don't believe anything you said makes any sense whatsoever. You know, she's actually the great spy and he's the idiot. he's comic relief in a lot of places, which I didn't expect at all.
Jason Statham is the comic relief.
He's funny as hell, man. Wow. There's a bit where he demands a face-off machine, like the Nick Cage and John Travolta movie, demanding that they have one because he knows the CIA has one somewhere, and he's like, "I know you." I know you twats have a he says twat, and these other guys are like, "Well, you know, here that just means vagina." He's like, "I know you vaginas have a face-off machine." It's so funny.
I want to see this even more now. That sounds awesome. Shocked.
Rose Byrne, funny as hell, like she always is. I mean, this is the reason I'm such a big fan. She's an actress who can do just about anything, and here she's an evil wench with also great comic timing with Melissa McCarthy. It's a movie that was pure enjoyment.
Now, the trailer kind of – I get the impression from the trailer that they don't, like, play on the whole her being a big girl thing at all either. Does that pop up in the full movie?
No, thank God. I'm so sick of it. I mean, you know, Chris Farley got in that thing in his career where he was Fat Guy Falls Down.
Right.
And that's what we were all worried about with Melissa McCarthy because she's genuinely talented and seems like a great person just from the little bits I've seen of her, like, in real life. So I root for her. Always root for her. And none of that crap in this one that I can recall. I mean, it was not.
Finally.
Yeah. She's just a fully fledged character who's a great spy in waiting. and the fact that it all works and it all makes sense by the end. In fact, she is like a bigger badass than Jason Statham. Like she kicks more ass than Jason Statham. And I believe it. You know, I mean, it works. I really liked it. And I think people are going to walk out of the theater feeling a little bit better about all the worry they have for Ghostbusters, because I really think that it's going to be a better movie. Now that I've seen this, I think it's going to be better than we thought.
Wow. Well, I really wanted to see this, but now I definitely have to see this. So after hearing you talk about it.
It's fun, man. Super fun. I give it a 7.5.
Okay.
And they do allude to, Paul Feig alluded to, he does hope this becomes a series because he enjoyed it that much. Making
oh,
it
really?
That much. Yep. I'd love to see Statham back, man. He's great.
I've never thought of Jason Statham as remotely funny.
You know what you should do is, have you ever seen him on talk shows? He's a really funny guy.
Really?
Like, and up close, and like in person, he doesn't look that intimidating at all.
Like, is he not that tall or?
He's about average, but he looks like a guy I want to go get drunk with. He doesn't seem like a guy that's going to kick my ass. You know, he's a guy that you're going to go to the pub and you're going to slam back about 12 Guinness and you're going to forget the night, but you're going to remember that it was probably the best night of your life. You know, he's that kind of guy. He's just, he just seems like an ultimately very cool guy.
That's
really Scott, this is from Spy.
You got an audio clip for this one too,
this
right?
Jason Statham, actually. Yes.
Why don't you go ahead and play that one?
The question
for us
pondered
as well.
To him is, what's it like playing a variation on a, of a character that you normally play?
I mean, it's, you have to tip your hat to Paul because he can get you to do anything. I mean, it's very difficult to, to try and see yourself in those particular, scenes doing something quite the opposite of what you're normally used to doing. You have to take a leap of faith. And you have to have a lot of trust in a particular man. Otherwise, you'd never do it. So, it really does go to you, Paul, for persuading me and the great coaxing on set. And, the end result turned out great.
Thank you for trusting me, James. For not killing me.
And here another quick bit. This is basically Rose Byrne and Paul Feig talking about how much of the movie is actually improv versus on the page.
We always start with the script, and then we start to do some alts and ideas come in, and it sort of goes through. But you always start with what's on the page.
I mean, we work very hard to make sure that the script, for me, a script is a blueprint that tells you where every scene has to go, and it's a fallback if, for some reason, everybody's brains go haywire that day. We've got what we have here, so we make sure it's really funny. But then for me, the whole fun is once you get to the set, that's when the fun begins. Because, as we all know, all the filmmakers here know, it takes years to get a movie made. And so you kill yourself, all these things, logistics, getting people, and you finally get to the set, and then something goes like, okay, we got an hour to shoot this. It's like, no, that's, now is when it has to happen. And so that's why I have writers there, I'm coming up with lines, I'm letting them improv and come up with things, and then we just kind of have this sort of organized chaos, I call it, that then the amazing Brent White, my editor extraordinaire, the man responsible for most modern comedy today, all the Judge movies, all the Mary Kay movies, all mine, we kind of put it together in the editing room, but that's the fun, is like just trying to throw them with things and just, feeding Jason the most ridiculous lines we could ever come up with. With Undercover as Barack Obama.
All right. Next up, we've got a movie called Nas and Malik. Now, this one's pretty interesting. It's two closeted Muslim teens hawk goods across Brooklyn and struggle to come clean about their sexuality as their secretive behavior leads them unknowingly into the crosshairs of the war on terror. Now, this is another one I couldn't find a trailer for, but this one sounds like it's pretty deep and combines a couple of ideas I've not seen in one film together. How'd you like this one?
I liked it fine. It was a different take on something, not a different take. It's a story I've never seen told before. Closeted Muslims, gay Muslims. There's no violence. I think you hear the story, you hear the kind of story it is. I think most people are going off the assumption that it's all going to end in some kind of violence, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those stories that always does. And the one thing I will say that the director did that was very, very smart and intelligent of him was to not have that happen. This is just a story about these two boys. The FBI does get involved, but it's because of they have a little bit of scheming, and I don't want to give any of that away in case you end up seeing the movie. But really, it's about two guys that are not allowed to be gay where they come from.
Right.
In their world, it's a sin. And I think what I admired most about the movie is they respect the fact that it's okay for religion to feel however they feel. They don't disrespect the religion. They don't disrespect being gay. Does that make sense? They managed to actually make a movie where I felt both areas were fairly represented, and it wasn't like a slam on either one.
So it's a little more on the fence instead of playing to one side or over the other.
Yeah, it doesn't make it into a political event.
Okay.
It's not just, it's so stupid that they do this, or it's so stupid that they're this way. It's very much these two men are gay in their world. Here's why their world feels this way. And here's their story. I mean, that's really all it is. And it's just one day in their life and them coming to the point where they kind of are outed, or are they going to out themselves, or are they outed, or are they just going to remain closeted? And, you know, it's a story, but it's really just like one day in these kids' lives. And I thought it worked, but it's not great. It doesn't take that extra step to be something where I'm like, you got to see this. It's going to change how you feel about something. But it was a very sweet story. I thought it was a sweet relationship between the two, and I enjoyed it, but it's pretty average. I give it a 5, actually.
5, okay. Well, we got one more before we get to your final two favorites, and this one's Uncle John. John Ashton stars as Uncle John, a Midwest farmer trying desperately to cover up a murder. While John tries to keep a revenge-minded brother away from his land, John's nephew begins courting Kate, a beautiful new coworker. And as the film progresses, the two worlds are destined to collide. Now, the trailer I saw for this film was very artsy. There was no dialogue, lots of still shots of Uncle John standing in his bathroom thinking really hard about something.
Mm-hmm.
Did the movie play out that way, or did it work for you?
You know what's different about this movie is it's a type of story I've never seen told this way.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is you've got the Uncle John story, which basically the movie starts with Uncle John has just killed someone. That's how the movie starts. He's killed someone, and he has to cover that crime up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you shift to his nephew, Ben, who is basically going through a work issue where he's got a new coworker named Kate who's just gorgeous and wonderful, and he's got an obvious crush on her, and it becomes like a romantic drama between those two.
Mm-hmm.
And both stories are told simultaneously until both worlds kind of collide at the end. It's really cool. I really liked it because it felt like two completely different movies. But they
have something in common at the end.
Well, because Ben is John's nephew. So at a point in the movie, they will come together. And then the story works, and I don't think it works the way people think it's going to. Like, it kind of goes a different direction than I think people think it will. But I loved the aspect of telling two completely different kinds of stories in the same movie without it being like an anthology or something.
Right.
I mean, because you've got the John storyline. It's very much a character study, a criminal character study of John and what is he, what really is going on in his mind. The person that he killed, brother Danny, comes back thinking that John is the one who killed him. So there's a lot of back and forth between them because Danny starts trying to torment John and what's John going to do and that sort of thing. And then you'll flip back over and you'll hear the Ben and Kate story where, you know, they're becoming very much will they become a couple? Will they not? Can it work? She kind of screws with his head a little bit. You know, some things happen there, and it totally different movies, but it ends up working as one continuous film at the end. It's really, really clever. I liked it.
Well, what's interesting from hearing you describe it is that most of these kinds of movies where you have different storylines that wind up tying together is multiple stories, you know, like 5, 6, 7, 8 different stories that wind up having something to do. This one's just two.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've seen that done before.
You haven't, that I'm aware of, but the one thing I want to stress is they are totally different kinds of stories.
Mm-hmm.
Usually like Traffic or Pulp Fiction and that sort of thing. They're the same kinds of, you know, they're in the criminal world or they're in the drug world. You know, whatever the story is that's going to come together, they're kind of both in the same kind of world. These almost feel like they're totally different kinds of movies.
Hmm.
I mean, very much like the Ben and Kate story is a romantic drama / comedy. It's quirky, it's funny. And then the John story is extremely serious, and it's a deep character study. So, I mean, it's really cool. I liked it. I really thought it was an interesting way to do it. And it was great to see John Ashton, who people might remember as Taggart from Beverly Hills Cop, and Midnight Run, which is one of my favorite movies with him in it. Great actor. I haven't seen him do anything of this length in some time, so it was good to see him back.
Good to hear that one turned out well, because I wasn't really sold so much on the trailer. I couldn't really wrap my head around what was going on. So it's I'm definitely more interested now.
Yeah, it's a hard one. It's a hard one to see and to understand. As the film progresses, you will start to get a better understanding where how they connect, and it works then.
Okay. And what was your price recommendation on that one?
I would give it $6.50.
Okay.
And quick story. at the Q&A, I was walking out of the theater and I almost knocked John Ashton, the star, all the way down the stairs.
You almost knocked him down the stairs?
Yeah, true story. I was walking out because, like I said, the actors and stuff are there. And as I was walking out, he was coming back from the restroom, I guess. And I ran right into him, like smack into him. I felt really bad because he almost went down.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
I'm like, great. I almost killed Taggart.
You would have been on the news.
I would have.
All right. We are down to the last two, and we saved the best for last, so to speak, the ones that you were most excited about or actually had the best impression of. The first is this movie called The Boy. It stars David Morse and Rainn Wilson, and it's labeled as an intimate portrait of a 9-year-old sociopath's growing fascination with death. That sounds kind of intriguing. Is it as dark as it sounds?
Yeah, it's probably a little darker, honestly. Jared Breeze plays Ted, and he's a little boy that lives with his dad, who's played by David Morse. And I think everybody knows David Morse, right? He's a character actor. He was in The Green Mile. He was on St. Elsewhere. He's been acting forever.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why he's kind of lives in this desolate area, his mom and dad owned a motel. They own a motel out in the middle of nowhere. You know, they never really say where it is, but it's in the middle of nowhere in the mountains somewhere. His mom ran off with a truck driver to Florida at one point. So it's just him and his dad. His dad is in this just reclusive state. You know, he's managing in this hotel, can't make the payments because people never stop by there because it's in the middle of nowhere. And we start to get to know this little boy. Now, the little boy, Ted, is obsessed with death, absolutely obsessed with death.
Like people or animals? Or
well, it starts. It's kind of like, and I keep telling people, it's like Dexter Begins, right?
Right.
It starts with little things. Like he'll go around and collect roadkill, and his dad pays him to pick it up off the highway so it's more appealing, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when people drive by, it's a more appealing area. So then we start to slowly see other things, which is like he'll put food on the middle of the highway to lure animals out there so he can watch them die.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then as the movie goes, it progresses and progresses and becomes more and more about his fascination with just death in general. And you start to see that this kid has no real conscience. And he is all about death. He's a really disturbed little boy. You know, there's a scene, this isn't really spoiling anything, but there's a couple that ends up staying at the motel and they have a little boy and he ends up, you know, swimming in a pool with the boy. And I'm just trying to give you an example of how disturbed this kid is.
Mm-hmm.
He's swimming with him and you think they're being friends. Well, we as the audience know that this kid is fucked up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're just watching, waiting. Well, he's going to, oh my God, what's he going to do? What's he going to do? And they play the game where they like hold each other's head under the water. And, you know, it's all fun and games until Ted gets that little glint in his eye and he holds that kid's head down. Aiden is the young actor's name, holds his head down way too long to the point where we as the audience don't know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to say what happens, but we as the audience do not know what's going to happen. It's really disturbing. And then Rainn Wilson shows up, like he has a car accident because of Ted, we believe. I don't want to give that away because that's kind of a little bit of a, I don't want to give that away. But so basically Rainn Wilson, who is a guy that, you know, from The Office, he's got a new TV show called Backstrom. He's always the funny guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And not at all. In this movie, I mean, he is just a broken guy, angry man, disturbed, and he kind of forms a little bit of a kinship with Ted. And things escalate from there. Now, saying anything more would really spoil what direction the movie goes. But the boy that plays Ted, Jared Breeze, blew me away. Blew me away. This kid creeped me the hell out. When I saw this kid right after the screening, I was a little bit afraid of him. That's how good he was. And it shocked me because he seems... In real life, he's a real affable, sweet young kid, just really happy-go-lucky, just did such a good job in this role as this evil little shit that I actually was starting to believe this kid's probably this is evil. You know what I mean? He's that good. And it's one of those movies where I don't think it's going to shock you, or it's going to, you know, it's not like a gore fest or anything like that. It's a very calculated, slowly escalating thriller that's more of the unnerving kind, where you get more unnerved and uncomfortable as the movie goes. And it really worked for me. I was really impressed. It's a little bit of a slow burn. If you're somebody that has to have whiz-bang effects all the time, you're not going to like it. It is very much a character drama, and it escalates as it goes, and it amps up quite a bit. Really, really liked it. I gave it an 8 out of 10.
That sounds exactly like the movie you want to go see, something that kind of gets under your skin and makes you feel a different way. That's kind of why you go to these festivals, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was one where I was thinking about it afterward, like days after. So that's always a good sign for me. It kind of reminded me of The Guest last year and Joe last year, which I found as movies I never heard of, and then ended up walking out going, man, I got to tell as many people as I can about this movie because it's that good.
Well, my interest has definitely peaked. I'd like to
thanks, Scott.
Let's listen to an audio.
The first
clip
one
about
is from Jared Breeze, who plays Ted.
As you're telling me,
wanted to show how adorable this kid is in real life versus the evil little prick he is in the movie. So here you go.
Well, definitely one of the hardest scenes that me and Aiden were both in was probably the scene in the tunnel, because I don't know if you can see, but in the back, there were bats. Remember, Aiden?
Yeah, that was great.
Okay, don't act with bats.
See, the kid is just really, really cute. Really, really cute. And here's the director, Craig McNeil, and the writer, Clay Chapman, just talking about why they decided to go with a more minimalistic approach, which means not showing all the violence, more implying it.
I find it more terrifying not to show things, you know, there's something in that restraint. You just want to see it, you want to see it, you want to see it, and then you're always disappointed when you see it. So it's like, just kind of hold off and not show it. You know, Clay, maybe you want to talk, we talked a lot about that in the writing.
I think you're right. It's restraint.
All right, last but not least, we have Ex Machina. This one's directed by Alex Garland, starring Domhnall Gleeson and Oscar Isaac. A young programmer is selected to participate in a breakthrough experiment in artificial intelligence by evaluating the human qualities of a breakthrough female AI. Now, this story seems right up my alley personally. You combine that with an actor like Domhnall Gleeson, who was great in About Time, as well as some beautiful special effects, and this looks like it adds up to be something really special. Please tell me I should check this one out.
Are you a big fan of Sunshine? Am I right?
Yes, that's one of my all-time favorite movies.
The writer-director is the guy who wrote Sunshine.
Oh, okay.
So just so you know, I mean, that's where the guy's coming from.
I thought that was Danny Boyle.
Danny Boyle directed it. Alex Garland wrote it.
Oh, I thought you said writer and director.
No, he wrote and directed this one, but he wrote Sunshine.
Oh, okay, gotcha. He was the writer from Sunshine. Okay, yes. Gotcha now.
And he also did Dread, and he's done a couple other films. This is one of the smartest science fiction films I've seen in forever.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, forever. I was. It's the movie that I didn't even care if I saw. I've got several friends, my friends Kevin and Rob. They both said, please go see this movie, please go see this movie. And I'm like, I don't care. I mean, it just seems like one that was going to be pretentious, and it was going to be one of those science fiction films where it's just trying to be smarter than everybody else. That's what I thought it was going to be. Not at all. Great, great movie. I shocked how much it made me think. When I left the theater, I was still thinking, and I said in my review, which you can find on the website if you want a really detailed account of what I thought of the movie, it really got under my skin and like got my creative juices going. Like, what does this mean? What does that mean? What would this mean? What, you know, it brings a question out on film that I haven't heard told well in a movie. And that is, can an AI actually feel? And really, who's the bigger problem? Is a AI the problem, or are we the problem? You know, it really ponders that question. I think it does it very effectively. Gleason is good. I mean, he's really like the backbone of the movie. And what it is he's basically told that he won a contest so he can be brought in and participate in an experiment where can you meet this robot, like this robot with Alicia Vikander, I don't know, I have no idea how you say her name, but wonderful Swedish actress. She did a great job. Where she's basically a robot. It's very obvious that she's a robot, but she has synthetic skin and whatnot, so she appears real. Can you have a relationship with her, get to know her, and eventually forget that she's a robot? Can you feel for her in a way that you wouldn't if it was another, like, can you feel for her like a person? Can you believe she's real?
Right.
And it's a really interesting way to tell a movie because I can't remember ever seeing that done before. You know, basically Nathan is the CEO of this company and he designed this AI and he really wants to create an experiment where this can be tested and Gleason is the test subject. And it's very important to him that he already knows she's a robot and that he's aware of her programming and what else and whatever else, but he needs to know, now that you know all that, can you still believe that it's possible for her to be real? Is her AI that advanced? And then the movie goes from there and it goes several different directions than I think you're going to expect.
Hmm.
I was taken aback. The performances were great. Gleason was very good. Alicia Vikander was very good, like I said. Oscar Isaac plays Nathan, the CEO. This dude I want to follow in every movie he ever does ever again.
Really?
Funny as hell. It's a dramatic character, but he has little moments where he just says shit that is funny as hell. And he's the one character that as soon as he leaves the frame, you want him back as soon as possible.
Like, that's interesting because the portrayal of him in the trailer makes him seem very dry.
Yeah, he's kind of dry, but he's funny. He's dry funny. I mean, he's very witty, very clever. And the direction the film goes, just left me with so many interesting ideas and theories as to what they were trying to say that it was really hard to not rave about it. And when I left, I actually liked it more the longer I was away from it. Because I was still
thinking about it,
caught in that world. Yeah. Thinking about it and wanting to go back to that world. I really want to see that movie again as soon as I got done watching it.
That sounds immensely entertaining.
It's great. I think you're going to love it, man. I really do.
Yeah.
It's much, much more than I thought it was going to be.
That's what you go to these festivals for, right?
I mean, that's what I go to every movie for. I mean, you hope that with every movie you watch, you know, you want to get a little taste of it in the trailer and then you want to go to the theater and just be blown away. And I was blown away with how well it was done. It was damn near a perfect movie for me.
Wow. Well, let's give the listeners a taste of what you experienced. You've got another audio link for this one as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, first, my score, 950.
950?
Almost perfect. Yep.
Oh, wow. That changed, didn't it?
I actually had a 9 and then I sat on it for a while and thought, you know what? It just won't leave my mind. It's Prisoners level. It's a little better than Nightcrawler.
Thanks, Scotty. And here Alex Garland is talking about AI and how relevant it is.
All right, why don't you go ahead and play that clip
for us. What he thinks about making a movie about AI, what his interpretations are.
That's simple. I mean, broadly speaking, when we can do something, somebody somewhere doesn't. Yeah, broadly speaking, right? So that makes what you're saying kind of inevitable. I mean, it sounds stupid, it sounds very far-fetched, but I think it's true. The reason I like the idea of AI is because they're an extension of us. I would encourage it. I think they would come from us if they developed in the way they could. And there's like a long-term future attached to them, longer than ours. For sure longer than ours. We have a very finite future. We're going to die on this rock. There's not going to be a wormhole off the side of Saturn. It's not going to be there. Sorry, guys. It sucks, but it's true. And even if you could get on a spaceship and go to the next nearest place, whatever it is, 6.5 light years or whatever, you're a new species by the time you arrive. If you survive it, and you don't survive it anyway, so... AIs can do that. I think they're our future. It's a bit crazy to say that in a Q&A about this film, but that is what I think.
And about Frank. I love Frank too. Frank. I love it. We got to ask one more question here, guys.
Thank you so much for bringing this film here. I just wanted to ask, you touch on the idea of the search engine powering the AI.
Oh, yeah.
And the chess game. And Caleb is kind of back to this chess game against the AI, which is sort of like a chess game against all of human knowledge. And can you touch a little bit on that?
I do want to say one thing about the search engine, which is that there's a sort of separate thing going on. This is late to the AI party, right? There's been tons of AI films recently, but last year and still yet to come, Ultron and so on. I don't think, why is it zeitgeist, right? I don't think it's because there's been any breakthrough in AI, it's because there hasn't. So it's something else, and I think it might be search engines. I think it's related to what we're talking about big tech companies. We don't really understand how these things work, so that's strange. But they seem to know how we work. They can anticipate things about us. They know more about us than we know about them. And that makes us feel scared. I think it's a kind of unconscious fear. So I was sort of referring to that rather than anything about search engines directly relating to how an AI might get constructed. I forgot the other bit.
So for Oscar and Donald, did you do any interesting search engines to get, like, into character to find out sort of what the inspirations might be?
One porn.
You have to. I mean, do the research.
Those guys are just hilarious. I hope you guys enjoyed that. Don't worry, it's not a spoiler. That's just one of the things. It's just a component to the algorithm for how they would develop an idea of how they would develop an AI. So that's what they were talking about.
All right, well, that's all the movies you got a chance to see. Now, before we wrap up, how soon can us and our listeners be able to catch these movies? I mean, is this like a 6-month wait? Are they all coming out this year, or when can we see them?
I think most of them will probably be out this year. I know Ex Machina comes out next month, I think. It comes out in April, so probably when you're listening to this, a couple weeks after you listen to this. Unfriended, I know, comes out in April. Several of the other ones, they're still looking for distribution, so it might not be for a while. And then you've got films that it might not come out for a year. Like Faults. I saw Faults last year's festival. It just came out, 2 weeks ago?
Right.
So, I mean, you just never know when it's going to get distribution, and that's what the festival hopefully will bring. I mean, hope you never have to see Sweaty Betty, but everything else, yeah.
But do you have any understanding of which of these will be wide releases, which will be like maybe video on demand or anything like that?
No, they don't give you any indication. I mean, Spy is obviously going to be a wide release, but the rest of them, I'm not sure.
Okay. Not
sure. You're just going to have to keep your eyes peeled to your local websites or the Hollywood Outsider podcast. I'm sure we'll talk about them as they come up.
Okay. Well, before we go, can you give us an idea about the most difficult things about going to a festival like this one?
Budgeting your time.
Yeah.
Especially
when there's only one of you.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we try to get, you're only given as many press passes as you're given, but I keep trying to get multiple ones. But it's a festival that there are so many movies to see. You know what I mean? There are so many movies to see, and I tried to see as many as I could. And there was a couple of days where I saw four, or if one day I saw four, but really three is like the most you can reasonably do because the city is pretty spread out, and you do have to take a shuttle, so you got to figure out all your time, and you got to hope you can get an express pass for what you want to see, and it's a lot of planning, it's a lot of thinking ahead, but it's really well worth it. I mean, if you're a film buff, man, it is well worth the time and expense.
Can you tell us the absolute best things about going to the festival?
Some of the panels are really, really, I mean, obviously the films and being able to see them with the filmmakers, that would be the absolute best. I mean, that's just an experience you're not going to get anywhere else.
Right.
And absolutely loved it. But there are some great panels. There's some great keynotes. I thought Mark Duplass, who I know you're a big fan of, from The League, but also he's become like a really admired producer in the independent film world. And he gave a great speech on independent filmmaking. Don't be afraid of video on demand, like how he really thinks video on demand is where independent film is going, which I agree with him completely. And I think that's great. because it's better than losing these movies, you know what I mean? Better than them falling through the cracks. And also, I mean, you'll get great panels. I went to one panel with Charles Barkley.
Barkley?
Yeah, which is, why is Charles Barkley there? But he was given a panel on interactive media, which is funny because he doesn't use any.
But that's terrible.
It was, yeah, exactly. That's terrible. That was just terrible. But it still, it was a really cool panel. But the best thing is, the absolute best thing is the fact that it's not like Comic-Con. And I'm, when I say that, please hear me out, because I'm sure some nerd just threw something at his radio.
You just don't like nerds.
No, I love nerds, but and geeks, I am one. I am one. I am a nerd. I am a geek. I mean, we are all on the same page. But at Comic-Con, there seems to be like a never-ending surplus of angry nerds. Or, you know, people in a frickin' hurry to push you out of their way and do whatever it is they need to do. It seems like there is more of that there. Maybe it's because there's more people, too. There's a lot more people at Comic-Con.
Right.
Here, these are, and maybe it's because, you know, it's not cheap to go to. There seems to be more of a professional respect, I guess, among the fans, where you don't get people screaming and yelling at the actors. They can actually walk around amongst you without having to have bodyguards at every location. They can very much just show up and be part of the group. They can be part of the audience. And I think that is so huge for what makes this event so refreshing, so well done, so well organized, is because you always have that feel that you are amongst friends. Every line I got in, I would have somebody to talk to. Everywhere I went, there would be somebody interesting to relate to. There would be a story to tell, or find out what movie they saw that really spoke to them, or something that they heard of that spoke to other people. That sort of thing. I mean, it's the only place I've ever been where you get that. And you'll have some of the most random I spent 20 minutes talking to a Russian prostitute on a street corner. Just about politics. I mean, it was... And then about movies and stuff. And it was just the most random thing ever, but I think it would only happen here. So it was a wonderful time. It's a wonderful experience if you're a huge film buff, which most people listening will be.
Now, I know you're not the type, but any starstruck moments for you, like seeing somebody famous or someone that you're a big fan of?
I saw several, and there's a couple I won't talk to because I just feel like it's bragging, and I don't like that, believe it or not.
Oh, okay.
But I did see a lot of people that I admire. Elijah Wood, I'm a big fan. Rose Byrne, I'm a big fan. Jason Statham was really cool to see Jason Statham. I'm not going to lie. That was almost a nerd moment. Melissa McCarthy. She was only able to just, because apparently she had to be somewhere for filming or something. So she stopped by just to introduce the movie. But she just seemed so cool. And it's hard not to like be on her side when you see her in person. She's so relatable. I mean, right. She just has that ability to just seem like she's one of you, you know? And I don't think a lot of actors can do that. But otherwise, not really starstruck. John Ashton kind of scared me that moment just because I thought I'm going to kill a Hollywood guy. And
because you almost knocked him over.
Yeah, I almost knocked him down the stairs. And he did not look thrilled. So if you buy... some reason are listening, John, I am really sorry that I almost killed you.
I assume you apologized profusely.
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. And Alex Garland, because I got to briefly talk to him, and he's just such a smart guy. He's the guy that directed Ex Machina. And he's so down to earth, and he wants to make sure you realize that he does not want anything to do with pretentious directors. He just seems like the kind of guy I'd want to hang out with. So, That's about it. I don't really get starstruck, man. It's really hard for me to go squee, you know.
That's pretty easy for me too, but oh well. Well, thanks, Aaron. That was a lot of fun. That's a lot of movies, and now I've got a few things to keep an eye out for. So thanks again for listening, everybody. And remember, the next time you head to a theater, buy popcorn.